welcome to Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm Don't Mess with Dolores.
And welcome to the show. Yes, we are back. It's been like 17 years since the Westworld crew has been back on a show.
How long has it been?
It's been 2 years.
Has it been 2 years? Wow.
It's been a little less than 2 years because I remember that the season two premiere happened at the Tribeca Film Festival, which was supposed to happen next month this year. So it would have been a little under 2 years. Though I also feel like it's been 17 years since like the date was announced for Westworld season three, yeah. Actual Westworld season three, considering what's happened. Forget Westworld, forget the real world, like our world, you know?
It is crazy though, like the time is somehow like sped up, but also been stretched out where like a week ago feels like 7 years ago. And
yeah.
And but the whole space in between the Westworld, because I think the trailer dropped this summer, right? And I was like, oh yeah, Westworld, that's right, you're still around. And then but now they've had all the, like the promo and everything for it, and it's getting excited about it, but it's also this crazy everything else going on in the world, so it's a nice respite, but at the same time, you know, a dystopian future world or whatever. It's a weird headspace to watch this show at the moment, even though it was a very enjoyable episode. I don't know what you guys thought.
Do you think it takes too long? They're gone too long. I mean, 2 years. I mean, it's just so long.
I mean, it's a good point. I mean, I'll admit. So I rewatched all 20 episodes prior to this season, because to your point, I don't know if for some reason the events of season one rang much more memorable in my head than the events of season two. So like I really had to rewatch, considering that the events of season two are going to be the more immediate ones, specifically, you know, Dolores leaving the park. I really need to remember like, okay, this is immediately what happened. Maybe it's because I had watched, you know, season one before watching season two. So this is my second time watching season one, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm personally all for in this day and age where there's just so much out there. Like I'm fine letting creators not feel like they're beholden to every year. That being said, who knows? It might take longer for season four, considering that didn't like the location of Westworld like burn in the fires earlier last year?
True, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It seems like this season we're not really going to be experiencing the park anyway. So maybe that's not in the long game plan. But yeah, this definitely was one of those things that you're like, oh yeah, Westworld. And maybe again, there's so much that's happened and maybe it has just been a sizable time away. It's more like a British TV model, right? Where they're we'll come back every other year when we feel like we're ready. And it seems like they're ready. I agree with Jay. I really enjoyed this episode. Here's my hot take. I enjoyed this more than the season two premiere, personally.
I would agree.
Season two, while there were some amazing moments, I think overall it definitely had the sophomore slump that I think countless, you know, great season one shows have faced. I think we did, you know, Stranger Things season three, and it was kind of a similar feeling where, you know, we definitely know season one of Stranger Things. We definitely know season one of Westworld. But season two is like, oh, yeah, that's right. That happened. But I think if there was any like big complaint of season two was the mystery and just how like the whole like time jumping back and forth with Bernardo, it just didn't quite land. For you watching it the second time, did it feel more cohesive, or did it feel as disjointed as when we were reviewing it the first time?
It definitely helped going in to remember some things, like whenever, you know, the widescreen black bars came in, that meant that was Dolores and Arnold in the past.
Yeah.
You know, it helped me, looking at the Charlotte Hale stuff a bit different in the most recent timeline, because we know that's Dolores, who's, you know, part of this extraction team. It definitely helped things a little bit. I would still say that things were a bit meandering, just sort of jumping between timelines. I mean, what they did was audacious. And I do think, I thought the last three episodes of the season were probably the strongest. I think the James Delo stuff and the whole idea of like exploring immortality and putting human souls into hosts, which is like very nicely perverted in this season as well. I thought it was interesting. It was just, it felt more, I guess, plot than mystery based. Whereas I feel like this season, you know, it does feel like this premiere felt a bit like we were dropped in the middle of the ocean and expected to swim with some things that were introduced. But personally, I felt like I understood more as to where we were going and what these characters were doing in the season three premiere than I did in the season two premiere, where it was, okay, you know, why, what happened in the 2 weeks? Why are all the hosts washed up in this canyon?
Yeah.
You know, why did Bernard, you know, what happened to Charlotte 2 weeks back? What happened to all these other characters? This felt like, and I heard stuff about how Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan said they wanted this season to be more linear, which I'm happy about, because that also means that they don't feel like they're personally beholden to telling those types of stories from the first two seasons.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, and I remember, you know, the big thing about they kind of pushed back season two because people on Reddit kind of figured out whatever the plot was going to be. And, you know, it's still like a curiosity to me today, like how much of that maybe led to not as tight of a story for season two. And now maybe, you know, they haven't had to like re-engineer the season, and maybe to their point, it'll also help with the cohesiveness of the story for season three.
Also, wouldn't you think there's a lot of pressure on this season?
Maybe there isn't, because now it's kind of like same thing for like Stranger Things season three, where season two is like, eh, and so now it's like expectations are lowered, so they can maybe just come at it like kind of
could
more,
be. But if you honestly have another bad, if you, not a bad season, if you have another season that's weak, and this is supposed to go for five, the plan was 5 years, right?
Five, yeah, I think seasons, like 4 or 5 seasons. Yeah. And again, maybe outside factors maybe have, like, I would not be completely surprised if they end in season four. They're definitely not ending this season. I feel like they would have announced that ahead of time.
For sure.
But yeah, from what I remember when we talked about in season one, it seemed like their overall plan was like, we had stories for 4 or 5 seasons.
Yes.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think the pressure, there's less pressure. And again, like having 2 years off, like there's not, and after Game of Thrones final season and all the pushback there, I just feel like, to me, like I just kind of getting a sense, and especially in this coronavirus world we live in, I feel like just pressure is way off. Like people got other things they got to worry about far more than, you know, is season three of Westworld landing or not. And I feel like hopefully from their creative standpoint, the pressure's not on, even they've already like, probably filmed everything, so it's too late if it's going to suck or not. But I think, and I feel, just because the way this first episode went, I feel like I don't feel any pressure from them that they gotta nail anything. But maybe that's just me just projecting.
Well, this episode definitely felt, I mean, it's been sci-fi from day one, but it felt more sci-fi.
This felt, right?
It's because we're not period anymore, right? Yeah, I guess we are period, but in a different way. We're not taking place in the old West, but with robots. Now this is 2059 or something?
2058.
Yeah. So like here we are now, this is what the world looks like. And, you know, you could see the touches that they made to obviously make it like, what would this reasonably like be like? Obviously, I think the biggest thing that we really saw, I mean, there were a lot of things that we saw, but I think with Dolores Engel, the self-driving vehicles was really one of the big things. We saw a little bit of like AI being everywhere. And so it makes sense from their perspective. They also said, I also heard an interview where they said this was going to be like the most hopeful season of Westworld, which really intrigues me, because I guess the question is, again, if it's supposed to be the war of like humans versus hosts, I don't know if we should even call them hosts anymore, because like they're not hosts in the park, but humans versus AI, who is it going to be hopeful for? Is it hopeful for both? I think we see in this episode like a human character who's hopeless about humanity, so I'm intrigued to see what exactly that messaging is and who that applies to.
Well,
I thought it was pretty encouraging because there was no traffic in Los Angeles. So that was pretty. Because if anyone's ever been to LA,
it's well known about LA's traffic problems. But I do want to hit upon that a little, because we were introduced to a new character, Caleb, played by, and I'm blanking on his name now, even though
Aaron Paul.
Thank you, Aaron Paul. But anyways, famous for playing Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad, but. You know, this character is kind of down and out, kind of frustrated with the meritocracy that kind of is running rampant in 2058. And so maybe there is this kind of like human and Dolores and the hosts kind of coming together, kind of bring down, you know, whatever the status quo is for society at the moment. And so maybe that is the hope, is that it's not just, you know, humans versus AI. It's AI and humans kind of bringing down the power structure that's set up as it is right now.
Well, that's what I feel like. And I think Dolores actually said that, I don't know if this episode and maybe one of the myriad trailers out there, that like basically she got out into this world and realized that it was a lot like hers, and that there are these people who feel like they're sort of like beholden to paths and that they are guided by something or someone. In this case, it might be a giant sphere. It might be the concept of God. And so she's realizing how much, you know, it's just essentially getting out of one cage into another larger cage.
Yep.
And she's still focused on that jailbreak aspect. And I feel like that's what we've really seen. And I think that's why she wants to really break into this. What is the name of this sphere? It's a biblical reference. Rehoboam?
I believe so, yeah.
It seems like she's looking to break into there, considering that that is sort of like the cradle of humans from her perspective, in that it seems like everyone's sort of been, the world has sort of been set on its right path using this technology. And so if she breaks into that, she can, for lack of a better term from another HBO show, break the chains and then be able to, you know, really step outside of every cage.
Yep. And that's where it's kind of just interesting to see her play. And again, I couldn't remember too much from Insight from season two, but were they really a player in season two or season one at all?
Who, Dolores?
No, the company, Insight?
No, Insight was not talked about whatsoever.
Okay.
Because it really does seem like they're separate. Like, I think Insight mentioned Delos, but I think it's mentioned more as like a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Like, this episode takes place 3 months after the end of season two. It seems pretty clear that the news of what happened in the park has broken, even though, you know, Robot Charlotte is trying to say everything is fine, like the shareholders are suffering.
All is well.
Exactly. So it definitely seems like it's more so, it'd be like, you know, Facebook being like, well, we can't be like Google. It more so seems like these are, you know, just tech giants going at one another.
Because that's where go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Please.
Oh, Robot Charlotte seemed to think that they were actually going to do better with all the death and destruction at Westworld because that's what people are into. So she's like, that's what people want.
And we kind of had the teaser at the end, the World War II world, which I guess is still in a park or whatever.
I'm very surprised in retrospect. And I don't know if Arnold was like initially invested in just the Westworld park, but that like his master creation to start this robot uprising was not placed in the World War II theme park, which you would imagine like had more artillery involved and more manpower. Maybe it's like the redheaded stepchild of the park. I'm not entirely sure, but we can certainly get into like the Maeve of it all, but it's an interesting thing to bring in. And I guess the war is happening outside of the park, but in rewatching this series, especially, I realized that maybe the Shogun World stuff was maybe one of the weaker parts of it, I guess, in terms of like it playing into the plot. Like, it was interesting to see things, to see what the direct crossover was into Edo era Japan, but like looking at it in terms of retrospect of the plot, they went there for two episodes and then they went back.
So
we'll see. You know, I give this maybe one or two episodes before we end up dipping out of this as well.
Well, and if that's the case, then like why? Because in season one, it's just kind of like, oh, we're expanding the world. But it's only cool if you actually like make it relevant. To your point, it wasn't really relevant in season two. And, you know, it definitely made for a cool kind of Marvel post-credit scene in this episode. But if it's, like you said, just another kind of two and done, and they've done so many trailers for this season, Maeve doesn't seem like she's going to be there for the entire season. So, you know, is it just, you know, to have this, you know, like, oh, crap, they're in Nazi Germany or whatever. Like,
well, do we think that she was interrogating the German guy, that she was torturing him because he sees her and he's afraid.
Well, yeah.
And then she looks down and her knuckles are all bruised and bloody.
But
okay.
Still, like if it's just kind of a two episode arc and then done, it's like, look, we could be in World War II. We're killing Nazis, which, you know, who wouldn't want to kill Nazis? It worked for Indiana Jones and a lot of other media.
It's working for a lot of stuff, like the Amazon show Hunters. Like they just finished, you know, Man in the High Castle. Like, it's the thing to do nowadays. It's interesting. And to Jack's point, you know, I wonder, I mean, there could be a thing where, like, I think if she was more of an ordinary host, it'd be very possible if, like, she was in analysis mode, told to beat this guy up, and then, like, she finally woke up.
Yeah.
I mean, God forbid, is this another timeline, or was this all in real time where, like, it took 3 months after the whole incident, but she was placed in this park, placed in this role, and then has finally woken up to it? Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure, because we know that, like, Arnold or Bernard transmitted like the four bug sort of into Maeve at the end of last season. And that's what caused her to sort of like break out when she was being literally cut apart in the Mesa. So maybe that happened again. I'm not entirely sure. To your point, I don't know how much they're going to focus on it, because it does seem like we're finally getting Maeve versus Dolores this season. And Bernard's going to make it happen. He's going to make those fans' wishes dreams come true by literally like dragging Maeve out of that park. I can imagine.
Yeah. Because and I did want to talk about Bernard's story in this episode, because it was kind of the most confusing to me at first, and then it finally kind of towards the end of that little his story, I was like, okay, he's going back to Westworld. Okay, all right, fine, cool. But the Armand Delgado, he's got like a Smeagol Gollum thing going on with being able to like switch on and off, and he doesn't really know who's in control. But kind of what were your all's thoughts of Armand Delgado, aka Bernard, and what's going on with him to start?
He's got a cool new job working the meat factory plant. I mean,
yeah, but why isn't he dressed up like anyone else? Like everyone else has to wear like smocks, and he can walk around like looking like Dexter in the like terrible ending, the beard and the like lumberjack.
Like, it wasn't a great disguise, just shaving his head and then growing a lot slightly longer beard, like.
Yeah, he doesn't look that different from like the photo of Bernard, right?
He needs the Superman glasses.
Yeah, he needed the Clark Kent.
Well, he had glasses before, so actually maybe not having them helped.
Oh, that's right. Good point. Right. Yeah, because I don't know who you are.
Do we know where? I forget. Did it say where he was? I forget if the little like anomaly thing said.
I thought it was China.
Maybe it's China.
It's an Asian country of some sort, because he got... No, it's China, because they're speaking Mandarin.
Because he ended up... Well, he ended up... where he ended up was, I think, the Philippines. To take a boat to Westworld. But, yeah, so to answer the whole, like, Smeagol Gollum thing, what I personally think it is when Dolores rebuilt Bernard, you know, she said that I used, obviously, some components from the Bernard personality, but she said that she also rebuilt him using her memories of Arnold. So I really do feel like this season it is going to be sort of like Bernard and Arnold sharing one consciousness.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess this little like garage door clicker is sort of putting him in analysis mode where Arnold can interrogate Bernard. Yeah. But I think that's going to be the big thing, right? Because Bernard obviously wants to work against Dolores. He wants to save humanity. Yeah. But Arnold, as the one who built Dolores and sort of harbors this love for her and set her on her path, obviously doesn't want that. So I think that's going to be a very interesting thing in itself. I know that Bernard's very driven in his you know, motives right now, but we'll see how much he comes into conflict with himself.
Yeah.
He becomes Chuck Norris, right? Took those two guys on, but he did say before he switched over, don't hurt them too bad.
Right. It's sort of like, I guess it's sort of like, you didn't want to kill him, right?
Yeah.
But what about the name Armand Delgado? I think it was kind of fun because it kind of sounded like Bernard Arnold.
Well, I was trying to remember if that was another, because remember that Bernard Lowe and Arnold Weber are anagrams of each other, but there's not a W in there. So I guess they didn't try to anagram it. They didn't go to like anagrams.com and just kept finding more names for him to find aliases under. But I do like it.
Changing my name to that. I like it. It's got a it rolls.
When you're on the run, Jeff. Yeah.
You need the beard for it.
Yeah, you need to grow a beard. You need to grow a beard.
Or just get a toupee.
No, I'll do that. It won't work.
No. Taking you this many years, Jack, like you rock this look. Don't bring a toupee into this.
I'm saying if I want to go into hiding, though.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I can't go around in a hat. I'd have to have some hair.
I'm quickly realizing, I've seen a beard on you. I don't think I've ever seen a beard on you. I think you need to grow a beard.
I have a goatee.
Yeah, that's
not I don't like the. It's too. And plus, they say right now it's not a good thing to have a beard.
Right.
I know. The CD. And I was like,
that's what they're saying.
So it seemed like from what Charlotte was saying that the entire like 113 dead people in the park was they blamed it on Bernard. Like, do we think this was like a PR job? Because Bernard died in the park at the end of season two. So they just thought like, let's, you know, schlep it off onto. Well, actually, no, because they said he was still on the lam. So like, I'm not sure what narrative they told everyone was about like, oh, this one guy killed all these people in this park, this disgruntled employee, and now he's on the run. So make sure you look out for him.
They always need a fall guy. So.
Yeah, it's clearly a fall guy. And it's curious I guess to Charlotte's point, though, like, it's always been dangerous, and this maybe adds even more to the excitement of you could really die or you could really
whatever. Because I don't know who it was, the guy said, he goes, do you not have a heart or something basically?
Yeah,
like
yeah. Well, so I heard, I think one of the guys before he got the hologram got put on mute, said, like, this is the most inhumane thing of it, which makes sense. And we also, I mean, I'm assuming, so Charlotte got appointed to interim CEO, and we saw that someone was in absentia. Yeah. But he left a machine proxy. So we saw that post-credit scene from season two. Are we going to assume that that's William?
I assumed it was.
I assumed it was William, yes.
Because we know that obviously his consciousness is like apparently launched far, far into the future if we're led to believe like the degraded forge that he wound up in at the end of last season. So maybe he's still exploring that. Maybe he's been captured in the park at this point. We're not entirely sure, but since we know he has power on the board, I guess it would make sense that he's, you know, not only this signing vote, but of course Charlotte would want a machine proxy to be left because she's in control of all machines at this moment.
Right.
But again, with it pulling the company private, since now there's going to be less prying eyes into the company, all of the kind of information that they've been pulling from all the guests, and clearly, you know, Dolores used it to her advantage when she took out the former Insight employee at the beginning of the episode. What other big things could they be mining or wanting to use that information for? Like, what do you think maybe the big play or the big, you know, kind of, you know, showing their hand is going to be for this whole Charlotte Delos kind of storyline? Or where do we think it might go?
No, it's a good question because, I mean, Charlotte did say, okay, my decision is that we are going to reopen the park and basically hurry up production and produce all these hosts over 48 hours.
Yeah.
It could honestly just be a thing of Dolores being like, well, there's five of us out here.
Yeah.
And we need more people if we want to take them out. And she is finding allies. You know, she does have Caleb, which we'll talk about. It seems like she may have this guy, Liam. Though we're not sure what their relationship is like. Yeah. Maybe with Caleb comes all these people on the Rico app, to your point, Jay, some of these more like underprivileged people who feel like they've been, you know, licking the boots of the people above them that they feel like they want to personally push against the 1%. Yeah. So I think that she's amounting an army, and I think maybe it's just an ability to like have an excuse to make more bodies and somehow convince the board of like, I know the robots went crazy last time. This time, they're definitely not going to go crazy. Don't you worry.
She has Martin, like the security guard.
That's true. And yeah, and she has someone who's, so that's an interesting thing with Liam as well. Cause it seemed like Liam was sort of like, what the hell? I've been, you know, seeing a robot the entire time. But if his closest confidant is a host, cause he could kind of like be the whisperer in his ear, right? Of like, I mean, cause she's going to come back and he's going to be like, I thought you were dead.
Yeah,
I don't know how she spins that, but you know, if his hired gun is going to be able to convince him, then maybe he'll be able to still work with her. And with him comes this entire Insight company.
Or, you know, maybe she just puts her consciousness into another body and that's how she plays. But then it would just be probably tough to have, you know, Evan Rachel Wood.
I think he likes it, so I don't see a problem with it.
Well, let's jump into what I thought was probably the most compelling storyline in this episode, to me anyway, which was the Caleb storyline.
It definitely set that up.
And just, you know, one, Aaron Paul, fantastic actor, and showed it again in this episode, just kind of like quickly jumping into a character storyline, no context, no, not seen at all in season one and two, but quickly kind of connected to a person. I thought it was a really kind of compelling story of kind of, you know, a war vet, lost person really close to him, and kind of the AI therapy thing that he was using to kind of talk through, but then like how he kind of mentioned that, like, you're not actually that person because he would never say that. And then just like how he's down and out, and then the Rico app, and then Marshawn Lynch shows up, which I thought was
who would have thought, like, the power combo, Marshawn Lynch and Emmy winner Lena Waithe rocking a scene together.
Exactly. Lena Waithe from Master of None.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was like, why do I know him? And the same thing. And then Marshawn Lynch was like, beast mode? What?
Now, were these scenes, those scenes where he was getting money and, you know, working, was that virtual reality or was that real?
That was real.
I think that was real. I personally, like, I wrote in my notes that basically Rico is like the dark web task rabbit, where basically like someone will put up a thing of like, hey, can you help run this, you know, drug money or run this product to this guy? Now, Caleb was very specific as to say that he never does personals, which they talked about on after the episode, I guess means like murder, kidnapping, you know, basically any sort of anything that gets literal blood on your hands, which is interesting because this is a guy who is obviously down and out in a myriad of ways, but like even he sort of has his own line. And I mean, that also talks about like the morality that even a person like he would struggle with, where like he's doing very dark, depraved things and getting involved with some very bad people, but even he is like, I am not going to do this, you know, like I'm above that. And it's also probably compounded by the fact that he came from a career where it was his job to kill people.
I really
love this character. I guess I didn't realize how much we necessarily needed this type of person who essentially was being treated like a host in the real world. And I'm sure we'll get that more as Dolores and him start to really, you know, talk after he's holding her bleeding in an alleyway. But this idea of like, you know, he talked about his apparently Francis, who's played by a Kid Cudi, I believe, speaking of random people making cameos in Westworld. But apparently, you know, Francis was always saying like that these people were just playing a game and they were playing parts in it. You know, it doesn't matter. Like they're set up to lose. Very much like the host. He's someone who, as you mentioned, like feels like he's only communicating with like AI. You know, the person that he's trying to connect with is just an automated voice. The person who calls him and tells him that he doesn't get a job and he's trying to ask for like some form of communication is an AI. There's even like a really symbolic scene where at the end of the night, he's walking down an escalator and the escalator stopped. And I think it's just a great little microcosm of the fact that he is just so the world of 2058 seems very automated or controlled, and from a certain perspective, as we saw in that first scene, and Caleb is somebody who doesn't fit as that, you know, recruiter talked about. He can't really negotiate his shape. He's someone who just doesn't fit into that world.
Well, you were talking about the AI told him he didn't get the job because he didn't have enough points or his credit, whatever it was.
But it reminded me, it was like when, you have a great resume or whatever.
Well, it reminded me of when you're trying to talk, you're calling a company and you're trying to get to that live person.
You just keep pressing, mashing like, zero.
God, press nine. Zero. You know, operator assistant, give me someone. You know, he almost had that same kind of frustration. Are you even human? And it doesn't answer him. Then he goes to the certain thing. I go, that I think that was a shout out to people that we all have had that issue with the, just give me a person, you know. Well,
and that's what I find so fascinating about this kind of future that we're seeing, because it's a very realistic future, right? AI is already going that way, and there's a lot of people out there that kind of fear AI as like a human replacement, which is kind of what the show kind of does. But I think what's really great about this Caleb character is I think in season two, I think we may have even said it in a couple episodes, there was, you know, concerns about, you know, if this just becomes the Dolores revenge tour. Like what's our buy into this story? Like, sure, we could say it's an allegory to, you know, what we are facing, but the fact that they brought a human character into it then adds so much more weight to what Dolores is trying to do. And I think it's a really, you know, crafty storytelling move to bring in this human character, because I think as a viewer now, we're probably that much more connected to, you know, the revolution that Dolores is trying to institute here. So,
it's an interesting idea, this idea of like listening to another voice, because we see Caleb literally do this, and there was certainly a large part of the episode when I definitely felt that Francis was dead. I was like, this feels like he's not, because he keeps hanging up calls. So like, this tells me that like it's not really him. And so I thought for a second, like, okay, is this his like Ford/Arnold?
Yeah.
You know, is this like his own voice, but using someone else's personality telling him what to do? It turns out to be quite a different thing. It turns out it's like that episode of Black Mirror when they sort of like aggregated someone's social media feed to like recreate their personality. Maybe they did this with Francis. But, you know, at the fancy schmancy party that Dolores attended with Liam, she talked about like the nucleus accumbens, which is like a 1.5-inch part of your brain that leads you to believe in God. You may not believe in a higher power, but your mind is built for it. And so I think that's probably something that she's realized in the past 3 months, this idea of like human beings having components as well, to the point where, again, you have this giant sphere that determines the path for everybody. They literally use the term path. And yep. So I do wonder from Dolores's perspective, and especially as she gets to know Caleb, like, is she happy that humans are not too dissimilar from hosts? Is she sad about that? Because she keeps feeling like she needs to find like freedom, and mm-hmm. even the people that she looks up to aren't free.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does just add so many levels of complexity and nuance that, you know, Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan can explore in this show. And yeah, I really look forward to seeing how that'll play out. And the Caleb's whole story also kind of really felt to me very much like Blade Runner. I don't know if anybody else got that kind of feel, but like just his kind of the whole just him going around definitely felt like you know, Harrison Ford character. Is it Deckard?
Deckard. Yeah.
And you know, it just felt very similar to that to me, but even more kind of in tune and in line with maybe how we could perceive the future turning out to be, even more so than kind of Blade Runner turned out to be.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, it felt very like sort of noir-esque. It yes. wasn't that he was like solving a mystery, but it felt yeah. like living his day in the life. We sort of got a sense as to like what LA is like, and I will say, like, from a production design perspective, this LA is so interesting. Apparently they like, it didn't really seem like a lot was visual effects. Apparently they went to Singapore, I think Spain and LA to sort of like aggregate the skylines.
Oh, really?
Singapore they particularly went to because they basically said like, well, they're so like, they basically have such outward facing technology that like, if you're looking for something that's just a little more futuristic and accomplishable from what we live in today, like, look at that. So I can't imagine there's actually that much that they ended up touching up there. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to sort of think about how those types of things, to Jay's point, like might exist in our own world, right? Yeah. Down to the visuals.
Yeah. Drone technology, all of that. Just it, like, it's not 2058, one is not that far away. What is that?
Right.
38 years.
Right. So. It was interesting. There's a video. I don't know if you guys watched the video for like the date announcement back in the day, but there was, I guess, a precursor to Rehoboam called Solomon, which makes sense because that was his predecessor of a king in the Bible. Yeah. But it was sort of showing like critical events that occurred, and like they started in like 2019. And so it's weird to like think about this alternate present / alternate distant future and how apparently all these crazy things happen. Don't look so crazy in retrospect given, you know, what we're going through right now, but apparently, like, you know, on April 17th, 2039, the Solomon system initiated, and then they, you know, had this representation of like these spikes, almost like a seismograph, I think, that measures like earthquakes.
Yep. Yeah, so, seismograph.
Yeah, and so basically like it calms it all down. And so it seems like this program is meant to like stabilize the world. And then apparently on February 27th, 2058, a critical event occurred. And I think it's implied to mean that it's Dolores sort of infiltrating everything. But I just thought that was a really, it just shows sort of, I guess, the timeline and how comparing it to sort of where we live in. Because like we mentioned, we sort of immersed ourselves in the reality of the park that I think we sort of, except for the couple of flashbacks that we've seen, we sort of forget about like what the outside world looks like, and now we are directly looking it in the face.
Yeah.
There was a scene where Caleb was in, you know, waiting to see the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they put this in because of what's going on today or if it just, there was a guy in there wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I said, saw that too. I wonder if they just put that in digitally enhanced, you know, digitally put that in because of what's going on today, or that was just something they plant, or did something happen during that time where, because LA didn't seem that crowded. I keep going to the LA. Yeah. It just wasn't that crowded. I mean, for Los Angeles.
There was also a really interesting in the first scene when we get this like very interesting former Insight shareholder, Jerry, when Dolores infiltrates his place. I think, doesn't he wake up with a mask on? And I couldn't tell if that was like a gas mask or like a sleep apnea mask. But no,
it was a gas mask because I believe the carbon monoxide was like up in the house.
Oh, so he went to sleep with a gas mask.
No, I don't think I think Dolores was to like put it on him.
Because of the when she turned on the
The AI was kind of turned against him
Right. Because I mean, it did seem like he was very cautious. Like, he warned his wife of, like, I told you not to go into town. So, yeah. Like, maybe this was him just being super cautious after apparently all these events in the world happened. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that we're not going to see this guy again. It seemed like Dolores purely just used him to get information and shares.
I think he's dead, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he is dead. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He's
but also
Nick Dolores... Carraway in The Great Gatsby in the pool.
Well, Dolores had said, "Do you remember me?" So he must have visited the park.
Well, yeah, there was a flashback scene, so it looks like
and I did think, and she talked about this with Martin as well. I thought for a second that maybe she was on like a revenge tour specifically against the people, because she visited the forge and like got the quote unquote book on all the guests' information mm-hmm. that were stored. So like right. she could theoretically have like a list of people that she's essentially killing who sort of mm-hmm. had their way with her
yeah.
in the past. But it seems more so it was sort of like two birds with one stone.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a perv, and also he happened to have, you know, scraped a little bit off the top in terms of information from Insight before he left. And I'm not sure what that info is, but I'm sure it very much came in handy for
plus whatever he wasn't a good guy for women either.
He killed his co-host.
Very abusive.
Wife. And yeah. and I like, though, that she didn't kill him. Like, he's, you know, he killed himself, essentially, like his paranoia
yeah.
and like
yeah.
don't mess with Dolores.
Yeah, no, he tried to kill her while she had her back turned.
Yeah.
And I think he showed like the danger in that, because she turned out to be a hologram. Like yep. he thought he could get one up on her, but she was one step ahead the entire time.
And as an opening scene, I found it really compelling just in that, you know, it's showing, again, very much like a lot of us have a lot of, you know, smart devices in our home and, you know, smart thermostats, all these things. And it's showing how that can very easily be turned against someone, which is what Dolores used. And it kind of, it ties in, again, to very, very close to where we are now. It ties into the machines turning against their, you know, creators, which is kind of the big theme of this show. And you know, also tied into
Battlestar Galactica.
Well, Battlestar Galactica, the original Westworld. I mean, it's been done 100 times. Metropolis.
Yeah, I want to ask about that though, because I mean, obviously, we saw. I think May possess a bit of this with the whole mesh network thing from last season, right?
Yeah.
This idea that like she could influence the other hosts when she was like speaking parcel tongue to them. Why? So, do you think what Dolores is like advanced enough that now she's able to do this with not host but just like other AI around her?
It seemed like it, like she was, you know, master of the machines, right? I mean, unless she's kind of pre-programmed it all, but what's that?
I mean, what she did with the motorcycle was cool.
I could see motorcycles having that power, but
to rescue her, I didn't realize it was going to take the other guy out.
Yeah, I think, again, I don't know if it is, because I could see maybe future motorcycles having, like, you know, voice control or voice command or something, but it would be very interesting. But don't you think they would have shown us that or something to show that now she has control over machines, or was it just her being
I thought they did show us because she was able to do it.
Yeah, just interesting because she didn't have that power last season. Like, when she was able to convince people, it was more so, like, to convince them with her words. And also, like, you know, there was that whole thing with that guy Craddock, remember, of the Confederados, of like, I killed you and now I'm going to bring you back to life to show how powerful I am.
Yeah.
She didn't have those Maeve abilities in Westworld of like, I can actually control you with my mind. Maybe it's that the hosts are more advanced intelligence than something like a self-driving car or the helicopter or anything, that maybe it's almost like a step down in intelligence that she'll be able to control them. I just thought it was very interesting considering she didn't do any of that. And now I guess this is more so her playground because all these things exist around her.
Yep. Yeah. I think.
Or it could have been when she got Jerry, she downloaded the money, but did she download other stuff? Other.
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
I mean, because there was several things downloading when we saw it. So maybe that was. Maybe that gave her some control or something.
Yeah, I hope she doesn't have it, just from a storytelling standpoint, because I think it's more compelling if Maeve's the only one that has that power. But who knows? I think it could go either way.
Well, I think it's also interesting. Like, maybe Maeve's power only works on hosts then, and so actually no, because I believe, not to say too much about the trailers, but I do believe she was, I think, controlling one of those riot robots in a couple of the scenes. So maybe that's not the case, but. I don't know. It's interesting. Just that, you know, I guess, you know, she has been set up as this antagonist for obvious reasons. And now she's amassing this army in many, many ways. And one of them is through all these vehicles.
Yeah.
Even though the humans try to, you know, Martin was able to commandeer the self-driving car to a certain extent. It's just that Dolores was then able to find him and then kill him using himself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is really cool. Which is a really neat scene. So let's talk about Dolores' story here, because we talked about that. It was main three stories. We had a little bit of Charlotte, but it was mainly on Bernard, Caleb, and then Dolores. Let's talk about her story here and just kind of where she's going. What is her main drive here? Clearly, you know, this whole insight thing is a big part of, you know, her eventual quest to liberate the downtrodden and the, you know, the machines that have been abused by humanity. I really kind of loved her very James Bond-esque approach in this episode. Even when she's like walking in, she has like the black dress and she like pulls it down and it turns to a gold. Just like,
yeah,
that's freaking
like
awesome.
The two-in-one look. Well, yeah. she had the spy glasses to spy on Liam's conversation, which we could definitely get into that, because I think the insight stuff, we have a lot of insight into that, for lack of a better term. But like the motorcycle, I felt was very James Bond as well. Right. So, like, this really is like Dolores living her best like super spy life after being like dirty, you know, outlaw last season. Like she's become like super sleek.
Yeah.
And I guess she has to fit in with the environment, right? Yeah. That's sort of the environment of 2058. So she has to go along with it to be Lola or whatever whoever she needs to be.
Yep. Yeah. And
because she was very cool too. I mean, she was very no stress,
smooth,
no pressure,
very smooth. So any thoughts, you know, with her now, you know, kind of getting everything set up the way she wanted to by, you know, replacing, is it Thomas is the son's name? I'm blanking on his name, but kind of getting
you mean
his
Liam.
Oh, Liam, thank you.
Yeah, because Liam Dempsey Jr., and then his father was the guy who created Insight.
Yes. Right. And that's kind of what seems to be her big play, is to try and influence him or gain control of that situation. And, you know, but now that she, you know, is injured, so apparently she can die because she's just not in the place to kind of have a backup body or something like that. So where does she go from here, I guess, is kind of where I was kind of left.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because, you know, obviously season two took place at the end of Arnold's old house.
Yeah.
But I forget where that was in proximity to L.A. I feel like it was in California, but I can't remember where, because maybe in that case, like, she would have him take her back there.
Yeah.
And basically be like, hey, I'm going to talk you through patching me up, which would be like a hell of a meet cute, you know, but it would be super interesting. I mean, I guess that's sort of where she goes from here. I don't know. The Caleb thing's gonna be really interesting. It almost reminds me a bit of like Maeve and Felix from season one of finding a human ally who is like interested in you and wants to help you on your mission, no matter how depraved it may be. Mm-hmm. Even though another connection, obviously, is the way she meets Caleb is very similar to the way she met William, which is, you know, that was after she had fired the gun. She'd finally like broken her code for the first time. She'd also gotten shot and sort of like staggered into where William and Logan were. And that's where that's where that relationship began. So it does seem like she's like fundamentally falling into broken men's laps all the time. And it'll be interesting to see if this relationship becomes as soul sucking for Caleb as it was for William.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, I'm excited to see where their storylines go. Go ahead.
I did like how when they were at the party and you had the drunk guy, the guy that's high, he did say, "We're all living in a simulation."
Yeah.
Which was, I've always thought was what's going on. I said, maybe that's what's going on, because how can Westworld be so big? But of course, I think it was just a theory out there. They said, okay, they gave it to the drunk guy. All right, here's your, don't believe it because this is who's saying it.
Well, I also feel like there's fundamentally and philosophically a lack between a simulation and this idea of like no reality. Like it's a weird discrepancy, but mm-hmm. I feel like there's a difference between like nothing around here is real and like everything around here is fake and arranged in a purposeful way for yeah. you to do something.
Right. Yeah.
And
I just thought it was odd that they said that. I said, oh, yeah, well, look who's saying it, the drug guy.
Yep. And how do we pronounce again? The Rehobrian?
Hey, I don't know. It's like the Rehoboam. Rehobam?
Rehobrian. Have they done an official Westworld podcast? Most of HBO shows are doing like Westworld our podcast now, so we just need them to pronounce it on the show so that we can.
Yeah,
know.
Well, I feel like we're gonna have it be said many exactly. times because again,
how did you not know?
Because obviously, this is you know, as soon as they walked in, I mean, it's literally the centerpiece of the Insight building. Dolores could not look away from it, so it's very clear that this thing is going to become like
yeah.
the MacGuffin of at least the first few episodes before she inevitably hacks into it, right?
Well, yeah, and when right. she hacks into it, then she'll, I assume, probably just break it or break the system because she even said, "Oh, a path for everyone." So clearly, she's probably just trying to like break the status quo of what that you know AI does, and then the world will go into chaos. But overall, I really liked this episode. I thought the vibe was really cool. Aside from some people have thought the extra credit scene or post credit scene was really neat or interesting. But I was like, what are we gonna do with that? Like, if it's just a
I thought it was cool because I wanted to see more of what was going on there.
But I think to Mike's point, unless it has some like significant,
I agree. If it's just a tease.
Then it kind of gets done in an episode, and like,
I think it was just it was a fun way to end the episode, but I don't know how much consequence it's going to bear overall. Considering yeah. if Bernard, I mean, what do you think about Bernard returning to Westworld?
Well, I think
you
know it ties in with your theory of he's going to go get Maeve and bring her into the
right.
Into the
I wonder from a psychological perspective what that's going to be like, you know, and like, yeah. is he? I mean, basically all the employees that he once knew, you know, Elsie's dead. Therese is dead. Yep. So like who's left? Stubbs? Because he's the host that like is set to guard them no matter what. So like yeah. I guess he can rely on Stubbs and maybe Felix and Sylvester, maybe.
Cause,
but that's kind of like
because Teddy's dead, right?
Teddy's dead. Elsie's dead. I assume again, the end of season two was that a bunch of these, so Teddy's in the Valley Beyond. He's like in robot heaven, so I don't think we're seeing him again. Mm-hmm. But right. a bunch of hosts, including Maeve, were gunned down when Charlotte and Elsie made Clementine that like anger bomb, basically, mm-hmm. and they made all the hosts turn against each other. And one of the extraction guys told Felix and Sylvester, like, well, you know, to grab all the ones you think are in need of reboot. So we know that Maeve's definitely back, obviously, because they had a preference. Maybe they brought back Hector, maybe they brought back Armistice. We're not entirely sure. I think maybe a cast list is out, but I would not be surprised if like quite a number of main cast members were shed between yeah. seasons two and three, just because yeah. of the way they're changing the story. But to that point, seeing Bernard come back might surprisingly bring about some familiar faces. And from mm-hmm. his own perspective, I mean, this is a place that essentially he was built to keep. Mm-hmm. What is that going to play on his mind and on the Arnold living in his mind as well?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So while we didn't get a lot of time with Bernard in this episode, clearly there's more to dig into there, which we'll get in future episodes. Any other final thoughts, gentlemen, before we move on?
Should we talk about the credits for a second, since we have new season, new credits?
Yeah, you're right. You're very right. Yes, new opening credits. Yeah. What are our thoughts here with some of the changes? Actually, it's completely new. There's nothing really
yeah.
left over.
Well, there's been like animal symbology in each season. Like the yep. first season was the horse.
Yep.
The second season was the buffalo, and yep. this one is the eagle.
Yes.
Which makes sense, right? Because this is sort of like flying. Eagle, America, freedom, the mm-hmm. host is seeking freedom. But I thought it was interesting how the eagle starts like shedding as it flies, like it's almost reminds me of like Icarus, like flying too close to the sun. Maybe that foreshadows it. There was this whole idea of like a dandelion blowing seeds, and those seeds turned into the Insight logo. So it could be this idea of like pollination of information. There was this really interesting image of these two bodies. You think it's two bodies reaching for each other, but it just turns out that it's like one, and then the other one's reflected in the surface.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that James Delos story that he repeated ad nauseum about. Like the one guy was in heaven, one guy was in hell, and he realized that, oh no, there's, you know, there was only the devil's, and there was a reflection staring down at you. Yeah. It's like this idea of like there is no mirror to you. There's a lot of like symmetry.
Well, it was very similar to the was it the Birth of Man or whatever that like, you know, what is that called? Anyway, sorry.
The Creation of Man, I think.
With the Michelangelo Sistine Chapel.
Yeah. And I think that there's actually this really interesting idea of symmetry. Like what they did with the WW in Westworld is they turn into each other and then they turn into a three.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting. Where like they almost played like mirror images of each other instead of just a pure transformation. So like maybe that represents like the mirroring between Westworld and the real world. Maybe it means the mirroring between Maeve and Dolores. Mm-hmm. But I also think ending on red is obviously a very bold choice on a show that was all about black or white for the first two seasons. To have it just be starkly red is making a very definitive statement as to like this season is going to be very different from what we did before.
It's going to be a bloodbath. If you thought it was a bloodbath before,
I mean, it was a pretty big bloodbath in this first episode. It was a bunch of, you know, nameless goons that got killed off. Yeah. But still, like, there was a lot. I thought that was a really cool. I liked when they filmed basically through the car's rear view camera.
Yes.
So that was a really cool scene.
That was very cool. Yeah.
That was awesome. It's just a really kind of crafty, you know, direction or director choice there. Just
classic Spielberg.
And they do that sometimes though, like with the Lawrence stuff. Remember, they would like focus on him, and we would only hear what was going on around him when William was killing a bunch of people. So like they've done a really good job of like creatively showing the brutality instead of like always just having like, and then Dolores shoots somebody and then somebody shoots somebody else. Like we have at least different ways of viewing it occasionally to sort of liven things up.
Exactly. Which makes it an entertaining view for sure. All right. Well, that will do it for what we thought about this episode. Normally we would go into listener feedback, but since we haven't done a podcast in 2 years, probably people forgot what the email or phone number is.
What?
WestworldJJM@gmail.com. It's against WestworldJJM@gmail.com. And then also our phone number at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
We love your feedback. Partially, I blame Jack for doing his own Westworld show with one of our most prolific feedbackers.
I told him to still send something in.
Clearly, he's overrun because he didn't. So I blame Jack for this. But that is okay. Please, we'd love to discuss it with you as well.
It's about keeping your enemies closer to you.
Starting next week.
That's what it's all about.
Is he going to be your Liam? Like you manipulate him to get theories out of him for your videos?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, because you're doing it the night before. So yeah, maybe you're just trying to like... Be careful, Ethan. I mean, I'm not saying that I haven't podcasted with this guy for 15 years, but I'm just saying, be careful. Watch your back. Watch your back. All right. Gentlemen, glad to be back in the saddle with you all.
Yeah.
Do I have a crackpot theory?
Oh, do you?
I do have a crack.
Oh, wow.
Good. Let's start this season off strong.
Yeah, let me get the drum set going here. Before we go to the crackpot theory, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. All right. What do you got for us, Jack?
Okay. I think this is going to be pretty spot on.
Okay. I didn't watch your show yesterday. So if you steal any theories from there, I think people are going to have to hold you accountable.
Well, no, it's actually technically my that I talked about a little bit, but thinking about it more today, I elaborated on it.
So
I kind of just off the top of my head, we have the scene where I almost said Jesse. Where Caleb is talking to his mom, you know, with the whole thing. And she says, "You're not my son."
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think that's a throwaway line. I think that, and there's also the scene where he, when he brings the car and the bag, where they're bringing Dolores to, and the guy holds a gun to his head and he says, I've already been shot in the head. Mm. And the guy puts his gun down. I think he is a host, a human in a host body. Mm. Because I think the mom knows that's not his son. And I think the guy that was holding the gun is a host and realized that he's some probably an important host and put his gun down. Why would he put the gun down?
That's true.
Why would you take the gun out of the guy's face and then put it down?
It's very
and then he's allowed to just walk wherever he wants to walk.
It's very Blade Runner-esque, right? Because that's one of the big kind of themes of Blade Runner and the sequel.
Well, let me add on to that then. What if, because we saw like 7 or 8 Bernards at one point in season 2, right? Mm-hmm. In like a cold storage. What if that is a Bernard? Because we know that Bernard was told to shoot himself in the head before.
Oh, that's a great, I love that.
And maybe that's why Dolores, like, I don't know, maybe it's serendipitous that they sought each other out, but maybe she's able to like form a relationship with him because of that. Speaking of, I guess, Caleb's mom, because we saw these like, and we saw this with Jerry as well, these like tablets.
Yeah.
These mechanized tablets. I'm really intrigued as to like what those are. Because at first I thought for him it was like, I don't know, like maybe some sort of like melatonin or something, but it looks like it's used for medicinal purposes.
Well, I think they even said like it takes the edge off or whatever, right?
Maybe it's some sort of like, maybe it's a drug.
Yeah.
It looks so mechanized. Like it wasn't like a tablet, like a pill that you would take. It looked like, I don't know, something you would get off like a circuit board and you just put it in your mouth.
Yep. I'd be curious to see how that plays out. I think all the clues are there for it to be that. I hope it's more of a red herring though, because I really like the idea of them actually having kind of the downtrodden humans as part of their coalition as well. I think that's more that's a more compelling story.
Right. I mean, sort of already done, right? The human that realized he's a host. Like yes. Bernard in the first season.
Yes.
But how often do you get shot in the head and live?
The people get shot in the head and live.
Does like the ear count as the head?
Yeah. Or even go through the mouth or.
Yeah. But why would the guy put down the gun?
Because he's probably just like, eh, whatever, I don't care.
He's or like, nothing's gonna intimidate this guy. Let me just put the gun down. You go have your little night walk and like, see if I care that you get shot in the head by these guys while they're getting out of the helicopter.
We'll see. But why would the mom say you're not my son?
Because she has dementia.
She might be having some memory problems, which is why that pill exists. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's. Listen, we need a crackpot theory, and that's a hell of a crackpot theory that our newest character who says, like, I work with, you know, I'm not into AI, I work alongside robots, but I don't get it, is in fact a robot himself.
Self-hating robot.
And I like how you added the Bernard twist to it, so I think that's the perfect crackpot.
We'll co-opt it, we'll co-parent this one.
So that is you all's crackpot theory.
And we're sticking to it.
Amen.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. If you like, give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call any time.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Call any time for the question, comments, and or theories. Send us an email to westworldjjm@gmail.com. Once again, it's westworldjjm@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup. If you use Amazon and it helps with that social distancing, order it from there instead of going to the store. jandjack.com/Amazon. And want to thank people that make this show possible, especially Attack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, Ed the Creepy Letter Carrier, and Grego the Lego. Have we picked a better name for him yet?
He doesn't like Grego the Lego.
He hates Grego the Lego. The Leg.
Ooh, I like Greg the Leg.
Greg the Leg.
Greg the Host.
Greg the Host. Wait, now he's a robot?
Yeah, what's
Greg the Keg.
Greg the Keg. Greg the Keg. No.
This has been like 3 weeks. How come we have not thought of anything yet?
Because he doesn't like anything we've picked. He needs to tell us what he wants. Greg, you need to tell us.
should I come with the new patron patronage is like you have to pick the name that these guys will call you by every podcast?
Sure.
Or is it more so like buyer beware of like when you do this, you run the risk of being given a nickname you don't like?
That's true.
Oh, I know when we did the Lost podcast, we gave people, as a joke, we just started giving people names, and then people started saying, hey, you didn't give me a name.
Yeah.
So then it became, okay, what are we going to call this person? It became almost a pain in the ass.
Well, because
then
this is what I was talking
about, all these names.
I would just say, you're not as good as that other person. That's why I'm giving you a name. Kidding. It's not the case.
He did say that. I do have it on
recording. No, I don't have it on recording. It doesn't exist anywhere. I deleted those files. No, I'm kidding. Okay. Anyway, thank you to all of our patrons. With this show, these shows would not be possible without your support. All right, that'll do it. We'll see you all next time. Oh, wait. I didn't even give a chance to like you guys to promote your stuff. Mike, you're a prolific podcaster. What do you got going on right now? It's Survivor Season 40.
It's Survivor Season 40. A lot of stuff going on, including the Jay and Jack Network. I have a lot of stuff going on, so I'll just say, check out at a Mike Bloom type. I am podcasting with Lost with Josh Regler, doing 2.5 to 3 hour deep dives every week. Podcasting
both
Survivor.
Of you guys are crazy. I don't understand it, but good for you. Good for you.
It's. I mean, listen. I never thought I'd be able to do a podcast where I pour over every single detail of the show, but somehow we are able to. So, if you're really interested into getting to Lost, if like Westworld has reinvigorated like the Mystery Box show for you, and you have some time, binge Lost and then check us out. Writing about Survivor, podcasting about Survivor, writing and podcasting about Star Trek. Bunch of other stuff going on at a Mike Bloom type, and I'm so happy to be back with you guys. It's one of those things where like rewatching Westworld, you forget, especially amidst all the stuff that goes on, of like how much you love this show. I think no matter what you say about some of the mysteries, I think it's just so well done and so well performed. And I was so happy to see it back, and I'm really excited to see where they're going to take things in Season 3.
Agreed. Jack, where can people find you?
They can find me at Crazy Hank TV. And if you like Mike and Josh Wiggler, They're doing this. I'm doing a Lost rewatch. They're doing the season finale of each season. So we just finished Season 2.
That's a big get.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's a big get for your show.
It is a big get.
It's also very strange because, so Jack, we did Season 2 finale back when Josh and I were still in the first third of Season 2. We realized that we're going to be covering Season 3. I think while we're still in the middle of Season 2, Jack's doubling up on stuff. So it feels like we're in our own timeline with Jack. And then we're going to have to like remember what we said for like months down the line for when we actually get to the finale in our own podcast.
But I think it's going pretty well. I think it's going pretty well with you too. Joining. It's a lot of fun doing it. So yeah, just go to YouTube, Crazy Hank TV, and it's all good. And Jay was even on one time.
I was on that one time.
Talking about Loss, and I think you almost had a stroke or something, didn't you?
Like, no, I didn't have a stroke.
It was like, I'm out of alcohol. So it was something like that. I was done talking about this stupid show.
Outside of Jay and Jack, you can check out what I'm doing, which is not talking about Lost, on geekdadlife.com or youtube.com/geekdadlife. Anyway, all right. We'll see you all next week. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.